Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hello, good people. Welcome to episode 44, in which we have our very first female guest, Heather Raftery. Really amazing jiu-jitsu competitor and a lovely human being, and it's a great episode. But before we get into the actual interview, just wanted to remind you guys, as always, it really means a lot to us if you can help support the show by checking out our sponsors. The first one is my online dojo, the Master Academy. If you head over to jiu-jitsu-master-academy.com and use the coupon code podcast, you'll get 10% off any of the memberships. This is something that's really close to my heart and that I've put a lot of effort into, and I think it's one of the best jiu-jitsu online learning resources you can find. Also, if you head on over to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store and use the same coupon code podcast, you'll get 10% off anything. And the code, the URL for that store is store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com. And finally, if you are thinking of trying CBD oil or any CBD-based products and you're in the UK, head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and use the coupon code JJBTRUTH and you'll get some discounts on all of their products. Okay, guys, here we go. Here's Heather Raftery, episode 44. Enjoy. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show, and I'm here with our very first Jiu-Jitsu sister, the first woman that we've had in, I think this is the 43rd episode that we're recording, so it's, on my part, a bit slack. I should get some more chicks on the show. This is a very cool girl who I met recently. Woman is a better term.
Thank you.
So Heather is a ridiculously good black belt. I'm going to be straight up. Most of the time when I roll with women, it's, you know, if I turn on the strength and stuff, it's it's not too challenging. But goddamn, rolled with Heather recently, and I was like, I said to her at the end of the roll, you're tough, and not just tough for a girl, tough full stop. And that's the truth. She's also got some very slick jiu-jitsu. And more importantly, she's an interesting person. So Heather, welcome on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about where and when you started training jiu-jitsu and how you came to be known as the Jiu-Jitsu Gypsy?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on there, and that's all very flattering. I try to live a pretty interesting life every day. Mm-hmm. So I started here in Tucson, mm-hmm. you know, and that was 9.5 years ago. I started because I started traveling, and traveling is my first love. Mm-hmm. It will always be my first love. And my dad was a little concerned. He's like, you're a single woman. You are a little headstrong. You need to start some kind of self-defense or something. And so I started at this gym, Undisputed, a little like fight gym. And it wasn't even a full fight gym. They had weights, and it used to be an old World's gym. So you had like a bunch of bodybuilders from the 1970s who are still like all jacked up. And started doing kickboxing. Did that for a couple weeks. It was like a cardio kickboxing class. Mm-hmm. I was so bored. And there was, they had a little mat area, and a guy by the name of Jason Bukic was teaching. He was a brown belt at that time. Looked like Jesus. He was actually a really decent looking guy. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he's cute. But I was also interested in what they were doing. And mm-hmm. I had never seen mixed martial arts before. I'd never heard of jiu-jitsu. So I stepped on the mat and I fell completely in love with it.
That's
and
cool.
A few weeks later, he left to teach in like Taiwan or Thailand. Okay. And Josh Hinger, who's Atos black belt now, mm-hmm. He was a purple belt at the time, started teaching. So he taught for 2.5 years before he went to grad school. And mm-hmm. so most of my foundation is from Josh. And then years later, I decided to move to California. And Josh was already there at Atos, and so it was a logical choice.
And so you arrived in California as a purple belt and went to the Atos Academy and started training there, is that
correct? No, I arrived as a brown belt.
Okay.
So I received my blue belt from Josh. Mm-hmm. I spent 2 years in Colorado training at various places, and that's where I got the name Jiu-Jitsu Gypsy. There was mm-hmm. like four of us gypsies who we were competitive athletes, and mm-hmm. we didn't have enough girls in our gym, so mm-hmm. we started traveling to each other's gyms. And I always had a gi in my bag wherever I was going around the world. So I became the gypsy, the original gypsy.
That's cool.
I went out to finish grad school, got a job in Miami, Florida, of all places. Uh-huh. It was not on my map yeah. of places to go before I received this job offer. At the time, I had a 1970 Beetle, mm-hmm. packed my Beetle with everything I owned, drove clear across the country.
Jeez, I'm amazed the Beetle made it across the country.
Like, I am too. Everybody's amazed. My Damn. Dad's amazed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I made it.
German engineering, right? Wow.
I didn't even know how to work on it then.
Yeah. Okay.
Started training at Fight Sports under Roberto Abreu,
cool.
Cyborg.
Yeah, yeah. He's such a cool dude.
Such a cool guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Received my brown belt from him. Mm-hmm. And then around that time, another 2 years had passed and I was ready to kind of do something different.
Okay.
So I moved out to San Diego. It was close enough to my family, about mm-hmm. six-hour drive for a normal vehicle, mm-hmm. 8 to 10 for like a 40-year-old vehicle. Mm-hmm. At the time, I had the bus. So I actually had a gypsy van. Mm-hmm. I hadn't tricked her out yet. Mm-hmm. But I was working on it.
So just for those listening, Heather has a legit VW. What is the name of that model?
It's like a bay window van.
But the nickname is?
It's not a Westie. It's so it's just a VW bus.
A VW bus. That's yeah. it. That's yeah. the phrase I was
Most
looking
people
for.
Call it a bus.
Like, I mean, I think of it as the Woodstock car. But yeah. The Woodstock vehicle, basically. Like, so we do like an impromptu training session here every couple of weekends. I just invite a bunch of the people I want to train with, and I've got a little matted space in my house, and I invited Heather, and she pitches up in this bright yellow Woodstock jiu-jitsu bus, and I'm like, fucking hell, that's cool. And I'm like, at that point I just think this is your ride, like this is how you drive around. And then you tell me you actually live in this van, and I'm both intrigued and impressed, because I think there's something about me, it's this, I don't know if it's a gene, but like I have that wanderlust as well. Like that kind of like when I'm in the same place for too long, I start getting like, I don't want to say it's antsy, but that's probably the best word for it. It's not that I'm dissatisfied. I'm just like, oh, I got this like itch I need to scratch. Mm. And I lived on the road out of a backpack for, I think it was almost 5 years, just never stayed in the same place for more than 6 weeks, just going like the circuit of Asia, South Africa, Europe, United States. And I mean, I thought that was pretty hardcore until I realized that you've been living in a fucking van for how long? 2-3 years?
For the past year and a half, actually. So the first year in California, I lived in an apartment, but I was working on it. So I was working on the interior. I was changing the... Buddy of mine out there helped me change the window seals. I was learning how to work on the engine. I was redoing. So then when I bought this thing, it was primer gray.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had nothing inside. It was actually painted black inside. It was awful. And bought it. I had to drop a new engine into it so it could actually go somewhere.
Like a brand new engine? Do they still make those?
Yeah. Or? Oh, yeah. No, sure. It's a new engine based off the old.
Okay.
Designs.
Okay.
So this thing could go another 40 yeah. years, really.
Oh, shit. That's amazing.
Learned how to work on it, and then in January of last year, not this year, but the previous year, I just moved into it.
Okay.
So I've been living out there in Pacific Beach, which is easy to live out there. It's not technically legal.
Yeah.
But it's not enforced.
Okay.
There are so many people van dwelling. They call it van dwelling.
Van dwelling.
And hashtag van life all that crazy stuff. And
it's getting more and more popular, it's my understanding, because like a lot of people they're dissatisfied with the classic American life and all the, I mean, I guess it's that appeal of living off the grid is someone who, you know, I remember I used to rent a house in London, an apartment, for many years. And then at 31 or 32, maybe even 33, that's when I left on that big pilgrimage around the world.
Mm.
Just not having like an electric bill and a gas bill and a rent bill and fucking property taxes and like, you know, your internet bill. And like,
yeah, it's nice it's not nice. Having those
it's
bills
nice,
to
yeah.
worry about. It.
And I can see the appeal as well. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who are sold the American dream and then when they realize what it's going to take to get to the level of American dream that they're sold. I mean, it's one thing to just have, like, you know, a car, a pool, and a, you know, big screen TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to have the life that you presented with on TV, like the pimped out rides and the, like, huge house with, like, rolling gardens and stuff like that. To get to that level, it requires something really, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I think a lot of people have to sell their souls to get to that point.
Exactly.
Or sell the most productive, exciting years of their lives.
So true. So true. In fact, that's something I've had on my mind a lot. Like, I look around now and I'm like, you know, having taken that... Having lived this jiu-jitsu lifestyle, I'll call it jiu-jitsu gypsy lifestyle as well, because it's not too far off yours. Mm. You know, I'll see some of these people who are like, okay, they've got a lot of financial... they've got properties and they've got, like, they're much further ahead into that adult life. And I think to myself, maybe I made the wrong choice because I've got to catch up now. But then I think to myself, would I trade that fucking time and those experiences? Never for, like,
exactly.
For what? A little bit of security? No way. No way.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to meet a like-minded person. I do, however, feel that if you're smart and you plan it, you can have both, right? There's different
phases.
Oh yeah,
and it's interesting you say that, because I'm trying to see if I can have that.
Yeah.
Both of those lifestyles.
Yeah.
So I moved back out here to Tucson, and my plan is to be out here part time,
mm-hmm.
and still go out for Worlds camps, do the whole athlete training thing,
mm-hmm.
Be out there in San Diego with Atos, but. I do, you know, want to have, like, a home base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm never going to stop traveling. That's not going to stop. And with the bus, you know, I can take a whole summer off and just visit 40, 50 jiu-jitsu gyms
mm-hmm.
during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, way
cool.
Meet so many people. And I think that's where that kind of wanderlust addiction is not so much in doing the traveling itself.
It's just having the option.
But, yeah. Seeing, like, meeting people,
mm-hmm.
you know, having new experiences every single day.
Yeah.
When you get kind of stuck in a rut, you know what you're going to do that day, you know what you're going to eat that day, you know who you're going to see that day. It's
mm-hmm.
so boring.
Well, I mean, yeah, I take your point. I agree with you. I was kind of thinking along the lines of, I mean, I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 38. How old are you?
I'm 32 this year.
Okay,
yeah.
So, you know, a good friend of mine, Jan, who's not even a friend, a brother, just such a cool dude.
Mm.
He said to me, just recently, we were in South Africa. He came to visit me out there, and he said, you know, dude, like, he had just turned 40, and he was like, look, I've lived this really cool life. I haven't had much responsibility. You know, I've slept with a bunch of women. I've fucking traveled everywhere. I've fucking partied. I've done all these cool things, but, you know, I'm 40 years old now, and I can see, like, I've crested that wave, right? And I've gone down the slope of the wave, and now I want to exit that wave gracefully. I don't want to have the wave crash on me. I don't want to be the 45-year-old dude,
yeah.
like, sitting in the bar. The same way, I'm sure you don't want to be the 50-year-old woman, like, living in a van.
No,
you know,
definitely
it's kinda
not,
like,
yeah.
there's a line, right?
I get where, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I definitely, I have a timeline to do this and be there. Especially being in California, you see that old lady, the crazy old
yeah.
lady who's wearing, like, five different patterned shirts
yeah,
and
yeah.
skirts and leaving out of this, like, really ratchet-looking van.
Uh-huh. With cats in the van, I'm sure, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But for now, I mean, it's kind of cool. I have a job where I can do that. I can work from anywhere. It's especially this day and age, when you have an internet-based job, you don't have to have a physical office. And so that's really helped, and that kind of opened up this possibility of living in the van.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm here, I live in it part-time. Having the parents close by is pretty convenient, so if I...
Mm-hmm.
If I need a bed,
that's cool.
Only 40 minutes away.
That's cool. You know, the thing that I asked you about this the other day, so I think it's so cool that, you know, you could go park your van up in a state park or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And spend the night there. And then I just pity the fool who stumbles past your van or maybe watches you, sees you outside and is like, okay, there's a chick. She's an easy target, right? And then, like, he's like, attacks you or whatever and finds out, damn, okay, this is the wrong move, right? I think that's kind of cool. And it's probably... There are probably very few jiu-jitsu black belts as accomplished as you living, female black belts living in vans, right? So it's really,
I
really
may be
cool.
the only female black belt living in a van at
Okay, cool. Well, I think
the
we can say categorically you're the only one living in a yellow van, right?
Yes,
Okay,
that narrows it down
cool.
sufficiently.
So, it's something I am more and more interested in as I get older and as I realize that your jiu-jitsu is a lot about athleticism and physicality. No matter what anyone tries to tell you, I keep trying to drum this into people's heads. Being bigger and stronger makes a fucking huge difference, right? And I was just sparring with this kid yesterday. He's a white belt, but goddamn, just he's 24 and he's just like, you can just feel he is raw aggression and physicality, and I just realizing, like, damn, I don't have that anymore, right? And what I've realized is a lot of women, I'd say almost all women don't have that in relation to men, right?
Oh,
Like,
absolutely,
like
yeah.
yeah, like you could take a 24-year-old woman against a 38-year-old woman, and that there will be that discrepancy. But like, for the average woman that walks into a jiu-jitsu academy, she doesn't have that, right? Like, she's always on that unequal footing with men, not because they're not as good as men. It's just based on like
It's,
biochem
yeah.
physiology, they're not the same.
Absolutely.
And
Physiologically, you could take me. I usually weigh around 125, 130 pounds.
damn.
I could face a dude, even a white belt, same exact weight, and because of his bone structure, the density of his bones, the connections of his ligaments
Connective
and
tissue, yeah.
tissues, and just his the amount of
Testosterone.
explosive testosterone, the
Yeah.
amount of explosive power that his muscles can exert, it takes, I have to put forth so much more energy than him in order to do the exact same thing, whether it's defending something or applying a submission. That's physiologically, that's just what I deal with, you know?
And like, for example, when we rolled last time, there were a lot of times when I was like, oh fuck, this chick's technique is better than mine. And I was thinking
Oh,
to myself,
shucks.
yeah, no, I mean, okay, no, there were times when but in certain areas, I was like, she's
Yeah,
got me
certain
on
areas,
this, yeah. And
perfect.
then I was like, but I can just power out, right?
Yeah.
Which is technically not the best thing to do. But the thought that was going through my mind is, thank fuck she's not a 24-year-old dude, right? Like, because then I'd just be smashed, right? And I think that that's what a lot of people. I keep trying to make this clear. I put out a Facebook Live video recently about it, which is that you have to benchmark yourself against realistic, or you have to use realistic benchmarks when you're taking stock of your ability. So for me, I don't benchmark myself against a 24-year-old anymore. I benchmark myself against a 38-year-old, right? And then I'm like, okay, cool. Here's a 38-year-old black belt. He walks in. If he and I have a role and I can edge him out, I'm like, okay, cool. Right? If he beats me, I'm like, okay, I gotta take a long hard look at myself. But if the kid who's 22 and I can see the fucking needle marks in his arms for his where he's or in his wherever where he's just injected himself and he's dripping with aggression and he trains 6 times a week and like, if he beats me, it's like, okay, dude, okay, like that's okay, right? So for you, I respect the fact that you will walk into a place like Atos, right? And I mean, you're on this huge you have this huge handicap, right? And yet you still go and do it, and I respect that a lot, Heather. And I want to know a little bit more, what is that like? How do you keep pushing through when everyone is bigger and stronger than you?
Right. I mean, that's an excellent question. It's one I've answered quite a bit because a lot of women, especially since I got received my black belt, a lot of women have sent me messages, have, you know, come up and talked to me about, you know, some of these like battles that they wage in their mind when they step on a mat. And when you step on the mat at Atos, I mean, that's a whole different animal because it's just so competition focused. There's so much, I wouldn't say, well, yes, I would say pressure to like excel and excel beyond any kind of bar that would ever have been set. You know, Atos is incredible. It's on a different level. But as a woman being there, I always tell those women, you have to fight your battles and find your successes. You have to enjoy the little successes. Like, I'm never going to like submit Mike Alira Jr. You know, I love the guy. He's one of my favorite training partners. But he's bigger than me, he's stronger than me, he's definitely more technical than me. that if I can pass his guard,
oh yeah, that's a like, victory. Yeah,
that is a victory. That's a huge victory for me because I've applied my technique to it, the best ability, and I've succeeded at least mm-hmm. passing his guard and holding it for mm-hmm. a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome to know. I mean, one thing I didn't mention is that sure, generally women don't have the physical attributes of men, but that is a double-edged sword because I notice as an instructor that women pick things up way more quickly, and I think it is because they cannot like force themselves through it. They have to be thinking, okay, what is the most efficient way to move my body? Mm-hmm. And I also think it's just a function of the way women are more observant in general.
We're very detail-oriented. Yeah. And there's like been studies on, you know, the difference between how detail-oriented women are as opposed to, mm-hmm. to men. And when I learn something, for example, like I'm not just listening and I'm not just looking and seeing what the instructor is teaching. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing all those little inside details. Like, okay. Where is he placing? How is he placing? Like, for me, I actually have, it hasn't been diagnosed, of course, but like I have a bit of a learning disability. So it takes me probably 3 to 4 times longer to do left and rights than other people. Shit. So if somebody tells me raise your left hand, you know, it'll take me a second to think, okay, this is my left hand.
Okay.
Driving, it's fine because you usually have plenty of time, especially in the bus. I have plenty of time before I have to turn or stop.
I'm just reminded, if I may interrupt you, of, you know, you guys have that show, the Americans have that show called Shark Tank. In England, there's an equivalent called Dragon's Den. It's basically exactly the same. And this one guy came in with this idea. So in England, you can take what's called the Channel Tunnel or the Eurostar, and you can, I think it's a Channel Tunnel. You get on a train in England.
Is that the one you go underwater?
Yeah, it goes under the channel. Oh, yeah. But you put your car on the train as well. So you go and chill out and your car is in another part of the train, and then you get under the tunnel. And then you
Very civilized.
Yeah, very civilized. But the thing is, in England, you drive on the left side of the road, and in France, you drive on the right, right? So this dude's idea was to come up with, it still blows my mind, a glove. It's just one glove, right? That you put on your right hand when you arrive in France to remind you to stay on the right side. So, and obviously the sharks, or the dragons as they call them, ripped the shit out of this guy because it was the worst idea in history. But I'm just wondering, maybe you should get a glove to wear to jiu-jitsu.
It's funny you say that, actually. So I, like, it's not embarrassing for me because I hardly get embarrassed anymore. Mm-hmm. But I did, like, explain this to one of my coaches when I was back in fight sports, Dennis Pinto. He's like Cyborg's number two guy there at fight sports. And I was like, if you're coaching me and you tell me left and right, I can't handle it. Like, you bring me completely out of the game. Like, I cannot, it takes me that much longer to focus. And in jiu-jitsu, you have to make split second decisions, especially on the competition mat. And like, I can't afford that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's like, well, let's put a sleeve on you. Put a, what was it? It was black on the left side.
Like a compression sleeve.
Okay. And a white one on the other side, or leave it white.
Okay.
And we'll do it that way because I'm very visual learner. And so when I do learn, like, I translate it. So if somebody says, put your left hand here or your right hand here, I think, okay, he's putting his outside arm or his inside arm or his body side arm or his head side arm.
Okay.
Like, it's all relative to your opponent.
Relative to other, yeah, to
and so if, mm-hmm, okay. Exactly.
That's cool.
So if you say a color, it's easier for me to process. Okay. Because I can see colors,
I see where this is going. So,
and white's, you know, a little closer to right than.
And we can get our Jiu-Jitsu Gypsy left right compression sleeves on your website for $19.95.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be great. No, that's very cool. In fact, I think I might take that cue from you in my own teaching. Use. Anatomical references in relation to the opponent, as opposed to take your left hand and put it mm-hmm. there. I do it sometimes. Yeah, it's the hand closest to the head goes.
Yeah, because it makes you actually, and I'm slightly ambidextrous because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all relative, so I'm not limited by, okay, I always use this right hand to do this.
Okay.
I'm always using the outside hand, so if I'm on the other side of the body, I'm going to use it outside of hand regardless. Mm-hmm. So I use it when I teach just because I have to.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so what's next for you? Okay, so this is something we didn't bring up, but I don't really follow competitive jiu-jitsu much anymore, but one of the dudes said to me, before I had got to meet you, this was about 3 weeks ago, like, they're like, oh, have you met Heather yet? And I was like, no, I haven't. And they're like, you got to meet this chick. She just tapped out Michelle Nicolini. And I honestly don't follow competitors. Mm. I don't know who the top guys and girls are at the moment, but I know I'd heard that name and I know she's no joke. So it's my understanding you tapped her out with a knee bar recently.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that.
I do both gi and no gi.
Okay. But
my no gi is quite better than my gi game just because I've been doing it longer. Okay. We started completely no gi. For 2.5 years, I had never put on the gi.
Okay.
So it was at the Nogi Worlds, and Michelle Nicolini, man, she was a black belt world champion before I had ever stepped on the mat. Like, I have been idolizing her forever. So when I saw that I was going to face her the first match, most people would ask, like, were you nervous? And I was exactly the opposite.
I'm guessing you were resigned.
It was whatever was going to happen was going to happen. Okay. Like, there was no pressure on me.
That's awesome.
The wildest feeling. I've never felt that in my entire 9.5 years of competing.
Mm-hmm. And that's why dudes often, who haven't been training for a while, they'll like say, oh, dude, I'm going to enter this competition, but I haven't been training for 6 months and I'm just going to have fun, right? And then they amazingly win or they have the best performance of their career. It's because they removed that pressure of themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I get in there and, you know, it was just exciting to be on the same mat as this jiu-jitsu legend. And granted, she's been out for a little while she's been focusing on her MMA career.
Okay.
But, like, she's no joke. She's never been a joke. You know, she's a legend.
Which, by implication, means that you're no joke.
Leader, I'd right? like to think so.
That's awesome.
But also, you know, I'm humble enough to know that, like, it's any day could be anybody's day.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? So it could have been her bad day and my mm-hmm. good day, and that's just it. And then
it's like on a long enough timeline, no one's win record is flawless. Everyone loses at some point. Everyone. If you compete enough, you're going to lose everyone.
Mm-hmm. Especially in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
part of the appeal of it, is you're never going to stop learning and you're never going to be on top 100% uh-huh. of the time.
I mean, that's why we know, like, again, I say this as a fan, but we know that the Hicks and Gracie 400-0 record that he claims, we know that's not true, because the nature of fighting is so random and so dynamic that no one, then there's so many different permutations and combinations it's like if you flip a coin, I guess that's not the exact, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Exactly.
In 400 matches, the best of the best is going to lose no matter what, at least a few times.
Mm-hmm. Too many variables to control. You can't control them.
For sure. So Heather, you had that amazing victory, and now you're thinking of getting a house here in Arizona, and then partly traveling, partly staying here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to open up your own academy eventually, or what's your plan?
Oh man, that would be tough. I don't think it'd be hard to open academy because there's just so you're married to it.
Yeah.
You know, and for my kind of life, maybe down the road, I'd consider it more.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I'm mostly back here. There's a nonprofit here in Tucson, and they've had a jiu-jitsu program for years.
This is Higher Ground.
Yeah. And I supported them. I've been remotely supporting them since I graduated from grad school.
Uh-huh.
You know, I received a message from Jansen, the director, and he's like, hey, are you coming back to Tucson? You know, we could use some help. So I get down there, and he had already been doing a great job with these kids. You
mm-hmm.
know, he already had 20, 30 kids on the mat. And how it works is you have, now it's transformed into something much, much bigger. But before it was these kids, it was an after-school program. You bring these kids in. They had an hour to do their homework. They had two activity sessions, an hour each. And if they didn't do their homework, they missed out on the first activity
uh-huh.
session. They could choose between, like, judo, boxing. I think they had art and dance. And sometimes they had, like, a bike program and sometimes a football program. But every single, like, year, Jiu-Jitsu's had the biggest turnout for their activities. Both the first and the second session.
And that's because Jiu-Jitsu's better, right?
Oh, man. And so, I'd like to believe so.
Yeah, yeah.
I helped them with kind of build their initial curriculum a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then I went to Miami, and they've still been doing great. They do great at all the competitions. Now they have Steve Owen, like, kind of leading the judo program. And Steve Owen's, like, a legend in the judo scene.
Okay.
From way back when. And he's been, like, some of these kids are just destroying at the judo competitions.
No way. Interesting.
And so I'm coming back here, and I'm going to be working for them part-time. And,
okay.
And now it's a really exciting time to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have certain schools in the school district wanting to put jiu-jitsu in replace of PE class.
No way.
Here in Tucson.
No way, that's cool.
Like, they're starting this program, and if it's successful and if we can get some, like, great statistics on how well these kids are doing,
mm-hmm.
like, we can expand throughout the Tucson Unified School District,
sure.
maybe into other cities, other states.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just having the opportunity to show the government, the local government, the local communities,
mm-hmm.
how effective jiu-jitsu is for young people,
mm-hmm.
that's, I mean, I couldn't pass it up.
Well, that's
so
cool.
To be a part of it, that's mostly why I'm
well,
here.
Well, good for you. Good
mm-hmm.
for you, Heather. That's awesome. If people want to find out more about you and what you do and where the van's going to be, how should they?
No one knows where the van's going to be at any moment. but definitely follow me on Instagram. I'm pretty active on that. I always respond to, or mostly always respond to messages. I try to leave the DMs alone, depending on what they're after. But yeah, Instagram, Jiu-Jitsu Gypsy, JiuJitsuGypsy.
Okay, great. Also, guys, there is a Meet the Master segment on my online academy, Master Academy, coming up with Heather, in which she shows one of the sickest side mount escapes I've ever seen. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. So head on over to jiu-jitsumasteracademy.com and check out the Master Academy. Thanks so much for your time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Heather is such a lovely human being, and I just really felt a good connection with her because she's lived a very similar lifestyle over the last several years to me. You know, always on the road like a rolling stone, and kind of on the fringes of society. And I really respect and admire that. I mean, it's one thing to do it as a 6-foot guy, but as a short girl, you know, that's and living in a van as well, which is way more hardcore than anything I've ever done. That's another thing entirely. She's also got such fantastic jiu-jitsu in one of the Master Academy sections, one of the Meet the Master segments. I do some training with Heather, and she gives me a real run, which is pretty impressive. I was blown away by how good her jiu-jitsu is. So she's a really cool person. Please make sure you follow her and check her out on Instagram. Okay, guys, I'll check you out next week with another episode of the show. Until then, peace out.